sometimes our outer environment is so loud, and more importantly, we have become so much part of that loudness that to really create that slowness and quietness, we do need to space. And that's where the retreat comes from. You retreat yourself in order to be able to, on an ongoing basis, treat yourself.
Please fasten your seatbelts and return your seats to their upright positions. We are now beginning our final approach to The Ginny Show.
Mitra Manish has a mind of her own. As a mindfulness coach, it's kind of a job requirement. But I'm not here to tell you about her work. This is a story about journeys. On today's episode, you're going to hear the story of one very resilient woman who went from fleeing her home country as a young adult to running a business that helps others find peace, groundedness, and inner strength. To understand Mitra, you first have to know what she was running from.
As the Iraqi grip tightens on the town, a few hundred bemused residents adjust to a new and frightening military presence, mainly the old and the infirm who couldn't manage to escape the war. Now, the Islamic Revolution has been replaced by the ruthless Arab socialism of President Saddam Hussein.
The year was 1980, and her home country, Iran, had just been invaded by neighboring Iraq at the behest of Saddam Hussein. The mood was turbulent, the future was uncertain, and anyone who could fled.
So the airports were shut down. It was the beginning of war and revolution. It was October of 1980. So we took a bus to the border of Iran and Turkey because there were no planes. And we had to exit Iran and enter to Turkey. So they took all of our passports. And there were about, 200, 150 people on that bus. And they called every single person except me. So imagine the devastation. I'm thinking it's the beginning of revolution. This is a new government. I have no idea what the system is.
Mitra was a young 20-something when she suddenly found herself trying to flee Iran. A mind once full of hope and optimism was suddenly overcome with fear. Now, she was just trying to get out alive.
I was so petrified that when I wanted to get up to go and ask the immigration officer at this end to say, like, what happened, I couldn't get up. I thought, oh my God, I'm paralyzed. I think the fear had paralyzed me.
But something pushed her to move, and quick.
I literally lifted my foot one by one, and I got up and I dragged myself to the counter and I asked the immigration officer, I said, "Sir, you have not called my name." And he looks at me and he looks down, doesn't answer. And I'm thinking, what's going to happen to me if he doesn't let me go? And he stamps my passport, he puts my passport on the counter, and I grab it so fast. I run so fast. I didn't see the glass door. And I'm so petrified that I keep going and I keep going. Thank God it was cold and I was wearing a lot of clothes. I took one piece out of my face. There's a little bit of blood, not too much. And I run and I run and I get on the bus. And when I got on the bus, I sobbed so much that the whole bus started crying. Of course, they were all emotional anyways because they were all leaving Iran. It was war, it was revolution, it was hard. But I just couldn't stop. And people would come to me and I said, it's okay, just let me cry. I have to cry. And I cried for the longest time.
After such a pivotal life event, you'd understand if Mitra chose to tuck the memories of her homeland into a safe box and just avoid the pain completely. But the joy in her retelling of life in Iran is palpable. And the beauty of memories is that they seem to sweeten with age.
More than he was my father, he was my hero. He was this hero that had no care about superficial things and a lot of care about real, true things. We were traveling through northern Iran and we stopped there and my dad said, I want you to meet this person. And we go in and I see the smallest yard, because in Iran, the homes have front yard, not backyard. So the door opens to the front yard and the home is at the back. The door was like an antique blue, brightly painted. So we knock at this door. She opens the door and I'm about to say, just like properly, hello and everything. And she just hugs me and hugs my dad. And she's so warm. And as she hugged me, I could smell the rose water on her. I can smell it still. So she hugs us and we go in. And I'm like looking at my dad like, who is she? As if like she's like my grandmother, but I've never met her. And we go in and she brings us food. And I remember it was in the morning. And she brings us this most delicious omelet. And the smell of garlic and tomato with this egg, I'm telling you, I had never smelt anything like that. And then I'll see this little thing in this little yard, and I go in, and it's a, what they call tanur, which is oven for baking bread. And she puts her hand in there and brings out fresh bread. I loved being there. Honestly, it was like storybooks that I had read, like the little home with the little woman, with the little yard, with the everything was miniature.
Her father couldn't have understood then what that day would mean to his daughter and the joy it would bring to her face with every retelling. It was a road trip memory that she still cherishes decades later.
It was so impactful, the simplicity of the provincial life, the depth of love, the smallness of home and largeness of her heart has stayed with me.
When Mitra was still in school, her father sadly passed away. But with his passing came her resilience. A resilience that helped her move two petrified and paralyzed feet on that life-altering day in 1980. Loss, whether it's the loss of a parent or the loss of a country, these events create irrevocable scars. They change lives. How depends on you.
It was challenging, but it was also empowering because we have a saying in Persian that there's nothing darker than the darkest black. And I saw, to me as a child, the darkest of black. And nothing would faze me after that because I thought if I can handle this, I can handle anything.
Mitra's resilience means that she isn't afraid to dust off the past and allow something new to reveal itself. Anyone who's ever missed a flight, forgotten their passport at the wrong moment, or checked into an Airbnb that looks nothing like the pictures knows this. You have to try and make the best of situations that sometimes, quite frankly, just suck. Just like the time when a place Mitra thought she knew changed in her 30-year absence. On a return trip to Bali, Mitra learned pretty quickly what mass tourism can do to a tiny island.
Yes, it used to be that chill, like, you know, hippie place that you would go and take off your clothes and you just want to, like, be free and barefoot and all of that. And that's exactly what I had remembered. So fast forward about 30 years later, I go back to Ubud. I was with my partner and he had never been to Bali. And I was telling him, like, it's like this and like that, and you're going to be relaxing. Ubud had been discovered by Westerners, of course, and all the hip-hop and all this, like, new tech startup companies and organic drinks and, like, fancy places have been built. And we arrived there in the place that we had, like, booked. And he looks at me and I look at him. I said, this wasn't like this before.
Not really keen to embrace the techno-fancy drink invasion of Ubud, she acted fast. They needed to keep the dream of a Zen vacation alive.
We were looking for like really off the grid kind of experience. I talked to the person that helped us and I told him, we want to go to the jungles. That's where we want to go. He said, I know the exact right person and place for you. So he introduces me to this wonderful young local person. Then I tell him where we want to go. And he says, exactly, I know exactly. I'm going to get you a driver. We go to a beautiful inner part of Bali. And we arrive literally in the middle of a jungle in a heaven of a place. I walked in and I said, yes, there's an organic garden. There was a beautiful local pregnant woman who was our chef. We were right by the water. There was nothing fancy, everything beautiful. And that was our escape from Ubud. Yeah, I find Ubud to be too LA-like, to be honest with you. We were escaping from LA and we arrived at a version of LA.
On the other side of the world.
We sat down and literally meditated for 1.5 hours. That's how jumbled up we were, and traveling and everything. And when we meditated, I remember we looked at each other and we said, slow, slow. That was our motto for the whole time. We really don't need to go to jungles of Bali to do that. But sometimes our outer environment is so loud. And more importantly, we have become so much part of that loudness that to really create that slowness and quietness, we do need to space. And that's where the retreat comes from. You retreat yourself in order to be able to, on an ongoing basis, treat yourself.
If you gathered up all of the t-shirts, beachwear, fancy hats, and knickknacks that you've brought home over the years from the trips you've taken, what percentage of those were actually worth lugging home in your suitcase? Come on, be honest now. When we're in vacation mode, we're thinking about now. We're not thinking about the practicality of hauling that pair of strappy sandals back home to Quebec. But memories, on the other hand, do last. In fact, they're the souvenirs that keep on giving long after we've gone back home, unpacked our bags, and dragged ourselves back to work. What would Mitra's Iranian road trip have been without her father knocking on a tiny blue door? What would that return to Ubud have been without her quick Zen pivot into the jungle? Just like the gift of slow and having a grandmother for a day, Mitra found another lasting life lesson on a trip to Italy. This one was wrapped in the rolling hills of Emilia-Romagna.
So this was about probably late 90s, and a group, about 20 of us, went to study the cooperatives in northern Italy to see what is their success story, what is their secret, and can we bring that to North America? And we have a wonderful driver and a huge bus to accommodate us. And we would go and visit each co-op. And this particular one, I think it was winery or dairy. I can't quite remember. So we go there and it's long way and the CEO of the company is there to welcome us and to tell us about how they formed it and how they run it and all of that. And we arrive at lunchtime and we go to lunch. And as soon as we sit down and he says, how did you get here? And we said, oh, we have a bus and we have a, you know, that we go everywhere with. And he says, great. And he says, before we start, where is your driver? And we say, oh, we don't know. He said, you know what? This is middle of nowhere. It's lunchtime. Let me go and find the driver. And we all feel so embarrassed because we forgot to invite the driver to join us for lunch. He goes. He doesn't send his assistant. He doesn't send a whatever. He goes. He leaves all his guests, goes and brings the driver, asks him to join us, and then he attends to us and educates us on how they run it and everything. That moved me so much. The CEO of the largest winery co-op in Italy did not forget about him. I think that says it all. Co-op is not just a great plan. Co-op is a philosophy. Co-op is understanding that we are co-operating with each other. We're not isolated people. We are not alone. We are always connected to each other. That's why they're successful. They know how connected they are. They know how to cooperate. And they know that every person, regardless of their position, is a human being and is important and has needs. We completely forgot that, you know, if we are starving, oh my God, maybe he's starving too. It's 1 o'clock, it's lunchtime, and lunch is important time in Italy. So it was a very human aspect of leadership and management and understanding why co-ops are successful in an environment that allows people to be connected and understood and taken care of.
This theme of connectedness is at the core of Mitra's worldview. It's a fundamental part of her travel experiences and the way she interacts with people and places. Sometimes, they're actually one and the same.
Every city is a person. Like, I give it a character, but London is an older gentleman.
Yes, you know, absolutely.
Toronto, you see? Toronto is a vivacious, a 30-something-year-old woman. You can just say, she's, hot and she's, happening. And it's, every city, I say, what person is this city?
Yeah.
And it allows me to connect with that city in a different way, as if, it was a human being. So every city has their character.
Yeah.
And it's there for you to discover. But the question is, who is going there? So which genie, which Mitra is visiting? Is the Mitra who wants to just add it to the list and say, I visited that? Or is the Mitra who really wants to get into the nature of the city and the essence of the city and the depth of the city?
It's easy to connect the dots between Mitra's past and the way she lives, travels, and operates in the world. From a girl forced to flee her homeland to a globe-trotting mindfulness coach, she reminds us of the importance of connectedness.
When you understand the bigger story of human beings, that we have all come here to realize that we are all connected and we're one, so it really doesn't matter where in the body you enter. Am I a hand? Am I visiting the hand? It's the same body. It's the same body of humanity. It's the same piece of land wherever I go. It's beautiful. It's a diverse experience. It's the same earth. It's the same human body. It's the same thing. The question is, where am I and how can I remember that we are all the same, come from the same place, going back to the same place? We're playing the game of physicality and experience.
Wise words indeed, Mitra. I hope today's episode has inspired you all to slow down, tap into your sources of resilience, and maybe even find your favorite city. Oh, you're probably wondering what she had to say about my favorite city.
New York is beautifully balanced in masculine and feminine energy. So it's a man-woman, and the person is in their early 50s, but it's really fits in emotional sense and in physicality. That's who I see New York to be.
Beautiful. I agree with you there. There is a toughness, but there is a beauty and a gentleness when you find those places, but you've got to find that beauty. It kind of does punch you in the face sometimes, but it's there if you look for it.
Yes.